So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Track Limits podcast team. By now, you would have heard our technical recap and some of the talk around the town amongst the paddock and the drivers about what happened in opening round in Austria. But we have some interesting conversation coming to you, particularly a debate. Prepare for things to get a bit heated on the Hamilton Albon situation. So, what's in store for us? Take it away, Phil.
Right, let's start off with Mercedes decimating everybody in qualifying. What do we think about the rest of the season, Josh? You said in pre-season that it was a bit worrying for the rest of the field that Mercedes looked so quick. It appears that they are still so quick, or it did during qualifying. So are you worried?
I'm probably not worried, and I'm not surprised either. The battle for third is going to be absolutely incredible this year. Just got to watch out for that. The Mercedes have clearly been the best in class. They just have absolutely aced the aerodynamics, the engine power, reliability potentially is a question, but...
We'll get to that.
We will get to that. But yeah, I think for the start of the season, if they look at it on the laps that they did throughout Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday as well, I think for them, they can be very pleased with the effort that they put in over the winter.
Yeah, seems a fair wrapping up there of the nightmare I was faced with on Saturday when they managed to qualify half a second ahead of everybody else. I was looking forward to maybe Max Verstappen getting amongst it. Looking forward to maybe even seeing a Ferrari somewhere near the front. It appears
Ferrari turn up.
It appears that Ferrari have gone away over the winter, and they've turned what was a fairly competitive car last season into a heap of nuts and bolts that is barely able to scrape into Q3.
Hey, what was the figure that you said earlier, Phil, the difference in qualifying times from last year?
Okay, so looking back at last year's qualifying times at the same track, Ferrari managed to build a new car that went nearly a whole second slower, whereas Mercedes managed to build a car that went, I think it's just under 4/10 faster. So
they've gone very far backwards.
Yes, nearly as far backwards as Alfa Romeo.
They've done the opposite of what an F1 team should, really, which is go slower than the year before.
Yes, they've
when there's no serious regulation changes.
Yes, in a stable regulation year. Nice one, Ferrari.
Well done.
Charles Leclerc in seventh. I think that was the best he could have hoped for, really. I think he maximised quali. Sebastian Vettel, 11th. It's the first time...
Didn't even make it into Q3.
It's the first time since he's been there that I would have said that, you know, pure car pace prevented him from getting into Q3. Obviously, he's had his accidents and his problems with the car in terms of engines and reliability, but I don't think he's ever just been too slow to get through to Q2 in Ferrari. I don't know about other teams, but yeah, I was really shocked. I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
Yeah, he's not had that much trouble. Well, I say trouble. Well, it is trouble. He's never had this much of an issue. Is it Red Bull or Ferrari? Even at Toro Rosso, I'm pretty sure he performed better than expected. But he's just completely flopped it. Obviously, some of that is the car. The majority of it is the car. Leclerc could not do much better. The other little bit is obviously him. Is it enough to come 11th? I'm not sure.
I think the track got faster, didn't it?
It did. The track was slowly getting faster. Q2, I think, was where it was fastest. In all honesty, shocked that Seb couldn't go out in Q2, but I just can't help but feel it's the car.
It was very close as well between, I mean, Mercedes clearly faster than everybody, but I think the gap between 15th and something like 5th or 6th was less than 0.3 seconds or something like that. It was incredibly close qualifying. So it was, he didn't get the maximum out of the car, Leclerc did, but it seems like the car just doesn't suit him at all.
Should we look at somebody? I mean, I think we're going to come back to Vettel, having all watched the race. So let's just save the Vettel bashing for now. We'll come back to it. Let's look at McLaren. Lando Norris, P4 in qualifying. I thought that was an absolutely fantastic lap.
Yeah, that was a stonker of a lap. And I think the track position, he got the perfect slot on track to do that as well. Whereas by the end, they were all kind of like nose to tail after Bottas had his issue. So I think the team read it quite well when to release him. And he just clicked with it on that particular lap. And he's right at home in there.
I think the McLaren, the car, has been a bit of a surprise. I don't think they were expecting to quite go so well I think they definitely thought Racing Point were going to be ahead of them, and Sergio Perez did get a representative lap time in, I believe. So they managed to outqualify the Racing Point on merit, which is a very positive considering the Racing Point is last year's Mercedes.
The pink Mercedes.
Yeah, your favourite car, eh, Josh?
I think it's a masterful piece of engineering. I can't, sorry. This is dangerous territory for me here. I could end up going off on one.
don't forget to call it the Tracing Point.
The Tracing Point, yeah. Will Buxton coined that term. But Racing Point, yeah, they've really placed themselves right in the middle of that midfield fight, and it made qualifying more interesting, I'd say, because it's one more team to add to that midfield pack, and getting into Q3 is now actually, it's a proper effort to get into Q3 now, as proven by the fact that Vettel couldn't do it. So I think I need a whole podcast on Racing Point, but maybe we should leave that for now.
Some other good performances. George Russell, 0.07 off of getting into Q2 in the Williams. Out-qualified Latifi by quite a margin. I think that's an honourable mention. Did anyone want to talk about Williams?
Just briefly, it was a remarkable improvement on last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From being at the back every single race, they've already outdone themselves from last year, and it took them half a weekend.
That graphic that you had, Phil, with the gains and the losses between this year and last year's qualifying, Racing Point managed to gain almost a second over last year. And then the second biggest gain was Williams. They gained about 0.7 over last year's qualifying time from that same graphic.
Yeah, that's a massive step. I mean, I don't know what teams would expect usually. I think it's usually around 2 to 3, maybe 0.4 that they would expect to gain in an off season. Is that about right?
At best, yeah.
Yeah.
So for them to be that much quicker, I mean, yeah, it's Latifi's first time. He's probably still, if it feels like a shark out of water kind of thing. He was 0.6 off the guy in front. But as Josh said, I mean, down to 15th was separated by not much. I remember coming home yesterday and following the times on my phone, and I think down to 19th was just over a second off of the lead at the end of Q1 at that time. So to be within a second of the leader, and last year during the race, they were way more than that off the next people in head on track. I think Williams have really, really pulled it together, and they've hit the ground running this year. So hats off to Claire and the team.
Okay. I think as well, another good performance from Valtteri Bottas, despite his flirtation with the scenery. Josh, I know you wanted to talk about the Hamilton penalty and the Bottas lawn mowing incident.
Yes. I thought at the time that it was incorrect to not penalise Hamilton on the basis that they penalised Verstappen last year in Mexico for a very similar sort of infringement. It turns out that the original decision to not penalise him was then overturned on the basis that the 3D camera that is on the front of the car was submitted as evidence by the Red Bull team to get a penalty for Hamilton instated from the F1 Twitter page. So the stewards didn't have access to that video at the time they made a decision, and then they overturned it on the basis of what a Twitter video had been shown. So basically, Red Bull held the phone up to the steward's face and said, look at that. That is an infringement right there. And in the interests of safety, just on that level, I think it was the right decision to penalise Hamilton.
That does make a little bit of a mockery of the stewards, really, in my view. I mean, the fact that they can overturn a... I can see you washing your hands together, Dom. All right, because I know what's coming. But
have you set me up here?
No, we're not set. No. Right. Let's go back to this. Right, Dom. The stewards on a Saturday evening. Yes, they messed it up because Twitter proved them wrong. But on Sunday, and we will talk about Sunday. Don't you worry.
Yes, we will.
It is a completely different matter, sir. So back to quali for now.
Yes, back to quali.
Save it. Yes, I think that you were right to penalise Hamilton. Clearly a yellow flag. Don't know what he was thinking. And, you know, it gave Mr. Verstappen quite a good opportunity for the race, starting second on the medium tyre. So would have had a harder tyre to be able to go longer into the race with. And then moving to the race on Sunday, that all fell apart, really. along with the Red Bull that he was driving.
Something fell apart, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we've covered quali quite significantly, I'd say. I think we can move on and talk about the race now, because that's what we're all here for.
Can I just say how good it was to hear the F1 theme tune play again this weekend? Like, you just, the minute it started playing, you're like, oh my God, it's back after so long. And you just sort of start singing along to it. And you're like, okay, I'm getting a bit too much into this now. But here comes, like, what we've all been waiting for.
Mate, I've been at home. I've been back working from home this week, and I've been walking through the house, humming it. I've been brushing my teeth in the morning, and I've been buzzing for this. So yeah, I sympathize with you there, Josh.
Is it the longest time between two F1 races since, I think it was the 1950s? Oh no, the Switzerland Grand Prix.
I think it was the very first season, or what, some a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. And also the latest it started.
Yeah, July.
Ever.
It was something like 200 and some days between Abu Dhabi and today.
217.
That's almost a year.
Counted every single one of those on your wall, just writing.
Day,
Dom's living room looks like a jail cell.
Day 200 without F1.
My living room is full of graffiti on the walls of me trying to keep myself sane, yeah.
Well, we're all glad it's back. The race start, I think what I liked about Austria, before we even get into it, was that it just had a little bit of everything. It had that little bit of F1, oh, this is going to be a boring race, just dangled in front of us at the start. You know, when you watch these races and you think, oh, it's going to be a France and they're all just going to drive around in circles and nothing's going to happen. It was just, oh yeah, there's Lewis, there's Valtteri at the front driving around in circles, everyone's going round and round and round and round and round. And I thought the only thing that is going to make this any good is Max Verstappen and his medium tires. I thought the strategy there would be interesting. And then lo and behold, his car just conked out. And I was gutted. I thought, like, that's it. I nearly turned it off. Race over. I didn't. And that's a lie. I've been so buzzing, I didn't care. Just to see them going around in circles would have been enough. But I was just so excited to see how Max's strategy would have played out. And then we were just, that was pulled away from us.
Yeah, at that point, it was seriously worrying that we were in for a France. But Verstappen, his pace at the beginning wasn't terrific. Obviously, the medium tyre is aiming to go longer, and it would have been interesting to see how he got on. But for me, by that point, I wasn't putting all of my hopes on Verstappen to be the only thing to make it interesting. And luckily, of course, it turned out we didn't need Max.
No, we didn't need Max. I'd like to talk about Curbgate. I thought that was one of the more amusing parts of the race, was when, I think, first of all, the Mercedes engine in Lance Stroll's car had some sensor issues, and the curbs at Austria are monstrous. So they've, you know, the sort of curbs that might damage cars more so than your average curb. Mercedes driving round, abusing the curbs, cutting it fine with track limits, driving over curbs at high speed, vibrating the car. Dom, I'm going to let you talk about this bit because I don't really know what happened. I just know there was a sensor issue. And you've got a little bit of a hypothesis about the sensor issue. So do you want to go ahead and explain that?
Yeah, sure. Well, for starters, if running over the curbs was affecting the car in some sort of way, telemetry wise, I can understand it affecting suspension or affecting aero or having some sort of vibration effect on the car's dynamic around each lap. But I can't understand how a sensor issue, especially on a gearbox in the case with the Mercedes cars, will be affected by running over the curbs if it's just based on vibration. So at a guess, I mean, I'm not familiar with how the sensors are laid out on a Formula One gearbox or a drivetrain, but just from my understanding of electronics and sensors from my background at work, unless it's a wheel speed sensor, whether it's mounted outboard on the hubs or inboard on the drive shaft ends, I imagine that they're highly sensitive because of, you know, they're programmed to, you know, to monitor loads and stuff, and then give feedback to the driver. You can then change incrementally diff settings mid corner and stuff like that. So maybe it's things like that that is then related to hydraulics that could then potentially cause a drivetrain failure from something as simple as a sensor. That could make sense. Running over a curbs at Austria, you know, the wheel speed sensor will be able to pick up those minute changes in speed as you're going over rumble strips, or if you hop over the big sausage curb at turn one or turn two, you get a bit of snap of wheel spin, and it's, you know, the wheels are loaded up laterally as opposed to inline. I can see how that would affect the sensor input, which would then, you know, trigger a chain, you know, a chain reaction of effects on the ECU. But apart from that, I can't see how that would be affected. Now, we've never seen this before in the hybrid era at all, with vibration affecting sensors. So, and it only happened to the Mercedes power plant.
Yeah, well, it was resulted in the team radioing into the drivers and asking them not to drive over the curbs, and they both sort of didn't listen and continued to drive around.
They had a bit of a bicker as well.
Yeah, they had a bit of it. They were at that point. It seemed like they were the two cars racing for the win, and that nobody else was really going to be bothering them. So yes, I can see why they both want to push each other hard, but they were driving around, and I think first of all, Bono got on the radio and told Hamilton that he couldn't get on the curbs. Then had to remind Hamilton that the curbs were the red and yellow, the red and white bits at the edge of the track. I thought that was quite funny. And then James Vowles came on, and you know when James Vowles comes on, it's serious. And he told both of the cars to slow down. And then I think Hamilton came back with, "But he's doing it more than me," and it just sounded like a school playground incident, which it was quite funny.
I think Bottas's response was just copy, and that was it. Typical Finn.
I mean, to be honest, when James Vowles gets on the radio to Valtteri Bottas, it usually doesn't end too well for Valtteri. So
they were both suspicious of those radio calls until it started like dawning on them. It's like, oh, actually, this is like the eighth time that they've called me now. I think I should probably listen to them now. And then they started avoiding the curves with like 10 laps to go.
It was very noticeable as well. How the minute on the broadcast they played James over the radio, the next shot is both of them staying well away from the curves.
Yeah, he's definitely in charge.
If you tell a racing driver to stay off the curves, that's like asking someone not to breathe. Like, how can you, as a racing driver, stay off the red and white bits there? They're painted red and white to make them visible so you can touch them. as a driver, how do you cope with having a message that ringing in your ear? And, you know, drivers are programmed to just ring the thing around a lap as fast as they can.
I think,
how was the driver supposed to react to that?
I think as well, it's based on trust, because they both had the message. They were both told not to fanny around with the curbs. But it was, well, he's not doing it, so I'm not doing it, because if he doesn't do it, he'll drive off and I wouldn't have a chance to go and catch him. And it's based on both of them doing it. I just loved it. And then, to be honest, curb gate led to the Mercedes slowing down and their race pace being kind of similar. I would have said similar to Albon in the Red Bull. Their lap times were sort of brought into down a bit to the similar kind of pace of the Red Bull. And then was it George? I mean, cars were falling off the track everywhere. Not crashing, just falling to bits.
They all turned into clown cars. They just sort of slowly drove around and bits started falling off, and then one wheel came away. Others started smoking.
Speaking of cars falling apart, both Haases had, well, Haas again lived up to their expectations of a double retirement on the opening round from a brake issue. And that one with Magnussen going into turn two alongside Ocon, fortunately there's lots of runoff there, and he did the best thing he possibly could. He you know, locked it on
did
the rear,
skid.
Probably dung through the box to help to shut the speed down and spin it and stall it. But if that had happened at a much higher speed corner with less runoff and he couldn't shut down in time, he would have been well into the barriers, and that would have been a very, very nasty accident.
Yeah, or Saint-Devot at Monaco. Or
exactly, yeah. Leclerc at Monaco when his brakes failed and he went into the back of...
Brendan.
Yes, Mr. Hartley.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that failure happening on both cars on the opening round, and they didn't have any brake failures or anything during Barcelona testing, nothing during practice or quali, and it happened then, and it didn't seem to fade, it just happened. And
yeah,
I just think
puff of black smoke coming off the brake discs on Magnussen's, wasn't there?
Yeah, fairly and surely if you've got all the data on the screen in front of you as a driver, or people, you know, back at camp in the paddock, surely they can see things developing. Well, obviously not all broadcasts are broadcasted to us watching, but I mean, it just seemed like they continued, like if they didn't expect it to happen. And with all the sensors and the telemetry coming off the cars, surely you can predict that something like that would happen. But again, we don't know.
Well, I mean, that's just two of the, is it seven cars that retired? We had Max conked out, Stroll pulled into the garage, Ricciardo pulled into the garage, Williams of George Russell pulled off to the side of the track, Kimi Raikkonen's right front wheel fell off, and Kvyat's left rear wheel fell off, or the suspension broke or something.
Exploded.
Yeah, it just seemed like they were all cursed out there. I mean, Latifi nearly got a point, for God's sake.
I would have loved
for him to get better than Russell, and that took him to do a whole year.
Yeah. I mean, Russell parked his car, which I think started the race. It kick-started the race a little bit, didn't it?
It did. First safety car, which brought everyone closer together. The Mercedes going through their troubles. Then, of course, everyone did the usual thing, pitting for fresh tyres, which then allowed the Mercedes to sort of run away again, nearly. But then, who was the second? The second safety car was...
The first safety car was Vettel. Not Vettel. Oh, God. Sorry, we've got Vettel on the mind because I'm going to slate him in a minute.
He might as well have retired.
The first one was Verstappen. And then the second one was George Russell. And the George Russell one was when it all kicked off. So when the two Mercedes stayed out, and we had, what was it? Perez, I don't even want to talk about Perez. Norris came in, put the mediums on, and so did Albon came in and put the softs on, and he came out in fourth, and he was behind Perez on the mediums and the two Mercedes on the hards. And I said at that point, Albon's got this in the bag. The Mercedes can't go fast. They've got to stay off the curbs. And they've got worn hards, and Albon had sort of a fresh scrub set of softs. So I thought it was his race to have, and then all hell broke loose. What happened then?
Hell indeed.
Here we go.
Josh, I feel like, Josh, you start to explain, because I'll get irate.
Well, the whole incident started going into turn four, when Albon was without DRS, getting a run on Hamilton, went around the outside of Lewis, was side by side with him at the entry, and then something happened.
He was ahead. You forgot to mention he was ahead.
You got to time your arguments here. You got to make sure that you bring.
Okay,
that in.
I'll pipe it down until I'm called upon.
We'll get there. It was a case of Albon basically had the run on Hamilton on the exit of the corner, and then both Hamilton and Albon collided, and Albon got spun around, and that was the end of his chances of winning this race.
So that's the objective fact.
Yes, I'm just preparing myself here.
Whose fault was it?
May I begin?
Do you know what? Yes,
Phil, begin.
You to serve.
Well, Hamilton was given a 5-second penalty. Let's just get that out there. The stewards looked at it and gave him a 5-second time penalty, which was added on to the end of the race. And that had effects on the rest of the race. And we'll cover that in a bit. But first of all, the Albon-Hamilton incident. In my opinion, and fact, that Albon had a superior tyre and he had superior straight line speed upon entry to the corner. He placed his car in such a position around the outside of the corner in such a manner that he was perfectly within his rights to do so. He left Hamilton all the space he needed and he was driving right around the outside of him, and it was Lewis Hamilton's responsibility to allow Alex Albon the space on the outside of that corner because his car was there. Now, I'm not saying that Hamilton did it on purpose. He, you know, you didn't see him turn left and ram him off the road. But I think more of an effort could have been made to allow room. They came together, Albon spins off. As a result, through no fault of his own, Albon's at the back of the grid again. I would have said that you would give a penalty because Hamilton had caused, not through a fault of his own, but he could have done more to avoid that collision, in my opinion.
Dom, what do you think?
Well, interesting you
say
that. That
was a good clearing of the throat there.
Interesting you say that, because on our group chat while we were watching, there was an image shared by Josh of the two of them on entry. And at that point, they were both side by side. Both had committed to their original lines. Both gave each other space, and there was still space on either side of each car. There was space on the outside of Alex, there was space on the inside of Lewis. But as that corner is downhill off camber, and then it opens on exit with the kitty litter on the outside, that is not no corner is the same. And the trajectory that they had on entry, they were both side by side at that point. So the corner is still Lewis's. At that point, he does not have to give up to Alex, but yes, he still has to give room, and there was still room there. They both followed the corner, and then as it opened out, then Alex got ahead. Now, bear in mind, the contact between the two wheels wasn't side to side. It was in line. It's like being caught in someone else's shoelaces. Now, once a scenario like that happens, where you have one wheel in front of the other from opposing cars, there is no way to bail. So the only way to bail from something like that was to bail way earlier. And as a racing driver, when you go into the corner side by side and there's still room, even if things are going to get closer, how can you bail from that? Not to mention, you know, yes, Lewis is on the hards, Alex is on the softs. The entire dynamic, it is a hard one to judge just from looking. Now, the fact that they gave a penalty, okay, fair enough. The FIA have more access to other data that we don't see. But on the onboard, it doesn't look like Lewis's car got out of shape, but it's off camber, you're going downhill, you're on the inferior tyre. You still have to control your speed while still trying to come off the brake to maintain your own line. You see at that point, when they're side by side, Lewis is looking ahead at the exit of the corner. If someone pops up alongside of you, unless their cockpit is far enough alongside in your peripheral to pick up, you don't know they're there unless you're looking for them. How is he expected to look on the outside of a corner like that, mid-corner, while trying to point his car in the right direction? I'm just trying to think, hold on, I'm just trying to think from a driver perspective before I then look at it from a steward's perspective, because after the race, I had a heated discussion with my dad about this from his stewarding experience back in Barbados. And it opened my eyes to certain things, but from a driver perspective, how is he supposed to bail out of that? He doesn't look over and open his line. You don't see him twitch, so you don't know if he got a bit of understeer or the car is moving around from underneath him. Or you don't know if the steering gets light underneath him. You know, they, from the day-to-day, may have seen that there was a G reading at a particular point in time at that corner that suggested that, yes, maybe he could have pulled more to the right. But just from watching, from what we saw, because we all saw the same thing. We have different opinions, but we all saw the same thing. I don't think that you can say it's Lewis's fault, because they both committed to that line and that line was closing. And if Alex was, I mean, okay, let's put it in a different scenario. If Max did that same move, and or Max was lining up for that same move, Max would be patient enough to wait another corner. No, I'm not saying that Albon isn't mature enough or isn't ready enough, but he's hungry. He's hungry, and today maybe a bit too hungry And that was on the restart lap. I mean, yes, if there's ever a time to do it, it's then, but you're on the superior tire. The Mercedes have to know, basically hit the brakes and not hit the curbs and stuff like that. Basically, the race is handed to you. It's like Max and Ocon all over again. He has no right to fall over back marker, but he did.
But I think
that incident wasn't... I don't think that incident could have been avoided because they both committed on entry when they were side by side, which was only going to plow it in one way.
The point you made about patience, that's kind of irrelevant from that incident. You have to look at that incident as separate. He's going to go for the overtake at some point. I completely agree that he should have waited. He had, 11 laps to do it. He was clearly much faster and hadn't even had DRS at that point. So, yes, he could have waited, but the point is that he didn't. He went to make a, what I would call, completely legitimate move.
Yeah, I agree.
Hamilton's position of Hamilton's car was the reason that that move didn't come out. And for me, that means that that's a...
But okay, what was the position of Hamilton's car on entry wrong?
The position of Hamilton's car on entry was fine, but
okay,
he knew as he was going into the corner that he was there. If you're telling me that he didn't know that, I would argue that he...
You have to question a racing driver.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Awareness. I mean, yes, it's very hard to see out of a Formula One car, and you've got helmets and everything, but they are elite professional racing drivers that, and he's been doing it for 12, 13, 14 seasons. So he would have known that he was there, and for me, could have done more to avoid that happening.
I mean, I would agree with you, Phil, to be honest. There are two things I'd say to what Dom raised. The first, the point on peripheral, saying that they've gone into the corner side by side. Before the corner's even begun, Hamilton knows that Albon's making a move, is on the outside, and is still on the outside of him on entry, mid-corner, and can see him before contact on exit. Yet there is still contact at the end of it. So... from my perspective, if Hamilton's in that situation, he has full knowledge. He's a six-time world champion. And he's raced brilliantly in every season that he's raced in. So he knows exactly where Albon is. And to say that he doesn't, I think he isn't true. I think he knows full well where he is. But he has full lock on, admittedly, and it looks like it's maximum lock. And his line is compromised because he's having to defend from Albon, who's on the outside. But he has the steering at full lock, but he also has the throttle. And in my view, if he can see that Albon has the run on him, he has the time to think, okay, I need to slot in behind now. The move is made. It's not, I can still get him down into the next corner. I think the run that Albon had was far better than what Hamilton had. And at that point, he's left in the position where he should concede and avoid contact where possible, and he didn't do that.
Alex got ahead of him by the exit of the corner, but on entry, they were side by side. Yes, he knows he's there, and they're side by side up until they pass the apex. That corner has a very early apex, and then it opens out afterwards. Once you pass the apex, the corner is pretty much over, right? It's opening out. You've passed what is the crux of what the corner is. At that point, they're still side by side, and he knows he's there. He's now looking to his exit to then say, okay, I'm picking my line to then leave this corner. And at that point, Alex then gets the run. Alex is then getting the run, and again, look at how the contact was from one tyre hitting the other in line. Alex gets the run on the outside. By the time he pops up, Lewis doesn't even look over. Yes, he knows he's there, but at that point, they were side by side. So at that point, when they're side by side, whose corner is it? But you can't say it's Alex's either.
I wouldn't say it's Hamilton's. It's not Hamilton's corner.
But you're trying to use that to prove that he's guilty.
Is innocent in the incident.
If Hamilton wasn't there, they wouldn't have collided.
If the only way.
Another thing I would say is, if you have a look at that if you change both drivers and you put Grosjean in Hamilton's position and you put, I don't know, Maldonado in Albon's position, or you put Max Verstappen, okay, maybe not. If you put, maybe Maldonado's the wrong analogy here, but if you put Grosjean in that, in Hamilton's position, and you put Ocon on the outside, and that collision happens, you blame Grosjean. You go, oh, that's a clumsy move. He should have, you know, he's just, you know, they've made contact there, and Ocon's made no attempt to, or, you know, has done nothing wrong in the incident.
Okay,
and Grosjean's the one that's driven him off the road, or okay, made contact with him, I should say. I think because it's Hamilton as well, the stakes are even higher. And he shouldn't, in a championship fight, should be thinking, right, I need to keep control of this race in my hands. Yes, Albon's ahead of me, but he could then also get ahead of Valtteri because he has the faster tyre, he's in the better strategy. And my proper race, my full championship race, is with Bottas.
Okay, did you see the opening lap move that Alex did on Lewis there on the flip side?
Yes, I did see that actually, and that is something that was quite interesting. I think Hamilton was in a very different position there because they were both on the same tyre, different tyre delta.
Right.
And the drive that Hamilton got on the first lap was not as good as the one that Albon got.
But Alex,
so he wasn't ahead at any point.
Alex moved over. He didn't race him off the circuit, but he raced him hard. He's fully within his right to. But Alex moved over, opened his line out, and Lewis had to bail out of it. Right? No. Because at that point, on the entry, Alex was still ahead.
So should Albon have bailed out?
So it's his corner.
Move.
He has the right. He is fully within his right to use the limits to the white line because he's the one ahead. Lewis, knowing that, pulls out, uses his better judgment. At the point where they did collide, they were side by side on entry. The only way for Lewis to avoid that is not just to lift. He'd have to back right out of it and potentially brake mid-corner. I don't think he had enough to then steer away, and I don't think just by lifting it would have had enough to prevent that contact. I think once they had both committed to the entry, the contact was always going to be made unless one of them was constantly on the brakes the entire way around the corner to try not to, you know, to try to avoid the contact. I mean, as they're racing, the whole point of it is they you know, Albon gets a run. Lewis comes over to defend the inside. Albon goes up the outside. They turn in. Obviously, Lewis is on the inside. His line is now compromised because he has to make the corner tighter. At that point, when they're on the apex, Albon is on the better line, but Lewis is on the inside, and they're side by side. You can't say that it's one that he has to bail out of it then. At that point, no one would bail. Because why would you? And then as the corner opens out, then Alex gets the run. And at that point, it's too late for Lewis to bail. That's like saying Lewis should have bailed on that collision with Rosberg at Barcelona, that famous one. By the time he committed to it, it closed so quickly, you can't react to it.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if the corner opens out at that particular corner. I think it tightens, if anything. And that's exaggerated.
Early in the apex, the corner happens, and then the rest of it is opening. The corner continues.
I don't think so. I would say the corner tightens on exit, personally, and I think that as a result, the fact that Hamilton's on the compromised line into a corner that's tight on exit anyway, or tighter on exit anyway, he needs the space where Alex is to make the corner. If Alex isn't there, he would use that space. He'd run as far wide as possible to open it up as much as possible because it's a tight corner. But because Alex is there, he can't do that. And he would know that when being side by side with Alex. And I think at that point, you'd think, okay, hands up, he's got me here. I need to make sure that I get a good exit out, but I can't take the space where Alex is because he's there. And I think Hamilton chose to get it as close as possible and made the error in not quite timing it right, in trying to get the best exit possible.
I would disagree, but we're never going to agree on something like this.
I think the other thing I'd say is this whole section has been overanalyzing the situation. It happened over the course of, what, 3 seconds? And when I first watched it, my immediate thought was, that's a penalty for Hamilton. And that hasn't changed throughout all this analysis, but when we try and say, okay, he's at this point, he's thinking, you think a lot of things in that time frame, I'm sure, and particularly as a Formula One driver, you would. But we can pick out, you know, ways in which Hamilton was justified to be on the inside there, or, you know, Albon was justified to be on the outside, and this and that. We're talking about something that happened over 3 seconds, and my initial thought was Albon has been wronged there, and the resultant punishment should be
a penalty for
Hamilton, because he can't just get away with a move like that.
So, I mean, there's always going to be people of both sides, and that's what stewards are there for, I guess, to make a decision based on what they see. And yeah, let's move on. The 5 second penalty given to Hamilton gave a bit of a spur on to a number of drivers. I would have said that Perez in with a shout, Leclerc and Norris, who were in, would have been after the incident, third, fourth and fifth. So, I mean, Leclerc made an absolutely fantastic move on Perez. Came from so far back, it was like a different period in time he came from. Just absolutely fantastic move. And then Norris made a very sort of similar move, and Perez tried to turn in on him, whether or not he maybe didn't see him, or, you know, Perez just being Perez, you don't know. But Norris made the move and was then in fourth on the track, and obviously used the last lap to put in the fastest lap of the race by any driver, to close. Did he close about a second on Hamilton in that last lap alone, to finish 4.8 seconds behind Hamilton, when Hamilton's 5 second penalty was applied, Lando Norris landed on the podium, which I was very pleased with.
What a sight that was. I love to see that. I think Lando's won over the hearts of most F1 fans in the fact he's a bit of a breath of fresh air for all the seriousness surrounding the sport. He's, you know, he's someone everyone can sort of get on with, it seems. So to see him on the podium was an absolute joy, because I think from his performances last year, he was on the right track. At no point did I think he ever deserved the podium last year, but he was going the right way about it. And in this weekend, I think he was just getting better and better. Admittedly, when he started the race, I was not expecting him to get a podium. But as it went on, I felt he just deserved it more and more. And yeah, to see him go and hug Zach Brown, that was just brilliant.
Yeah,
I think that was one of the highlights of the race.
I was when he went over the line, and there was that split second of has he done it? Nobody knows, has he done it? And then the classification came through, and I was just off the sofa, in this sort of starfish position in my living room, just screaming, and the cat was cowering under the chair, and the neighbours probably thinking, what is this weirdo doing next door? Obviously, I was watching Lando Norris nail a podium.
I'm so happy for him, I have to say. Even more so is the fact that I predicted this. It was, maybe not predicted. I hoped this would happen. I hope this would happen. And in the first race of the season, it's happened. And the way in which it happened, yeah, like you say, was just incredible to watch. I was watching the numbers just tick and slowly update, not looking at all at what was on track. I was just watching the bar on the left, just saying, you know, 5.3, 5.1, and then 4.8. And I was like, he's done it, but there's still two corners to go. Can he hold it? And he ran wide on the last corner, and you're thinking, oh no, has that cost him? And when it came through, it was just, it was such a good feeling. Like, you're like, oh, you know, I'm so happy for him.
Yeah, what I loved about the end of the race was completely, with about 69 laps of the 71, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 69 laps. completely lost track of how many were left. Everything was just so exciting. And then the camera flicked to Bottas and Hamilton coming around the last corner of the last lap. And you look up, and it's like, oh my God, it's the end of the race. Thinking that there's, I want more. I want an extra five laps to see how this goes. Remember even the commentators, Martin and...
Crofty.
The camera cuts to the checkered flag and they're going, oh, it's the end of the race. It just weren't prepared for that good of an ending.
Yeah, one thing I'll say as well is that as much as we've talked a lot about the incident, I'm not going to name any names, but we know the one I'm talking about, I wouldn't change it for the world. I wouldn't have that have panned out any different, as much as I like Alex Albon. But, you know, I think
like
it was, oh yeah, you know me, love a bit of carnage. So there was some carnage there, and then it allowed, I think it probably made it even more exciting at the end of, is Lando Norris going to get the podium? So great race. One of the best races I've seen. I've been watching for 5-6 years. One of the best I've seen, definitely. Right, we've got a couple of things to just talk about. Conscious we've been talking for a while now. We've introduced a couple of new segments to the show, and that is choosing a Willy of the Weekend and a G of the Grand Prix. So, in addition to our hope and prediction for the next round, but first of all, I'd like you all to choose a Willy of the Weekend and a reason. And a G of the Grand Prix and a reason. So has anybody got a Willy of the Weekend lined up?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Go on then. Who's your Willy?
The Willy of the Weekend is Sebastian Vettel for messing up and nearly taking out Carlos Sainz in classic Sebastian lunge fashion. The thing is, I think he decided to make the lunge, but then messed it up. Locked up and made it worse, so that the only thing he could do to avoid hitting Carlos was to spin. Which, to be fair, he did well to avoid it. But going for a move that results in you having to crash to avoid crashing into someone, you're a bit of a willy.
Josh, do you have a willy?
A willy of the weekend. My willy of the weekend is going to go to Lance Stroll. I think he could have done a lot better pre-Sunday. And I think part of the reason he retired was because of the way he was driving and going over the curbs. So I think he could have got a very, very good result this weekend. But both him and the car, they let each other down, I think. So yeah, he's my Willy of the weekend.
Dom, who's your Willy of the weekend?
I'm going to agree with Chris on this one. Vettel just got it wrong again. And given all that's happened recently, I mean, we have been defending him. We here at Track Limits Podcast have been defending him and his talent and hoping that he'd stay at Ferrari. And then he goes and returns a favour with this. So that's definitely Willy territory for me.
I'm going to...
Makes us look bad.
Yeah, my Willy is... Sergio Perez I guess it's quite a similar reason to you, Josh, in that I just think he slightly underperformed the car. I think the Racing Point could have had a better result, and he nearly took out Lando Norris, yeah, I just think that was, as Dom said, Willy territory. Plus, you already picked Vettel twice, and I didn't want to say that he's a triple Willy. So I think I just picked Sergio Perez for nearly taking out Norris and not doing as well as he should have done.
Now, moving on to the G of the Grand Prix, for those that don't understand what a G is, let's just say our driver of the day.
Yeah. Okay.
Or the move of the day performed by the driver. That's the G of the Grand Prix.
G of the Grand Prix. I've got one.
Yeah, Phil, you start.
I'm going to say my G of the Grand Prix is Charles Leclerc. Because he... he had no right to finish P2 today at all. He just maximized everything. He could have done no better, I don't think, than P2. He made an unbelievable move on Perez. He made a move on Norris. And you could argue that the McLaren was the superior car to the Ferrari today. He outperformed his Willy teammate. He just did everything right. So Charles Leclerc, who has had a cracking start to the championship, despite being in a rather lackluster Ferrari.
It was a very mature performance by him in comparison to his four-time world champion teammate, yeah. Dom, who is your G of the Grand Prix?
My G of the Grand Prix has to be my guy, Esteban Ocon. After being out of a car competitively for that long, come back and, you know, he was racing. I mean, he was challenging for positions all the way through the grid. He finished 8th, and that's pretty much where he used to finish back in his back then Force India days. And yeah, I mean, he's back to stay. I don't think the Renault as a car, as a unit, could have given much more. Maybe it would have been interesting to see how that battle between him and Ricciardo would have played out, but he got some points. He finished in 8th, which is, you know, an average position where he used to finish before. And I'm just glad to see him back.
I think we all are.
Right, G. Josh is G.
My G of the Grand Prix goes to the stewards. I think they got, I think they got all the decisions right this weekend.
Oh, God.
I can't think of any. Usually we're quite quick to criticise the stewards, but I think this weekend they acted within the lines, you know, within the rule book, and I thought they did a good job. But if I was to pick a performance on track, then it's going to have to go to Lando Norris. He had to work hard for that podium, setting basically 2 qualifying laps at the end on older tyres, all the engine modes, everything turned up, and he didn't make a mistake.
And he fended off his teammate as well.
He fended off his teammate at a crucial point, yep, and made a good move on Perez. He gets it for me.
Chris, who's your G?
I have to agree with Josh. It's Lando, for the same reasons I said earlier. He is just really happy he got a podium, and he deserved one. And hopefully this is more of the start of many more to come.
Right. Well, usually at this point, we would probably do a hope and a prediction for next weekend. We have been talking for a very long time. I think we've overrun with the debate on over Hamilton and Albon. So I think what we'll do, those two drivers. What we'll do is I'll just bring it to a close here. I'll say I hope that we have a race that is just as entertaining as that next week when we come back to Austria. Thanks very much for listening. This is Track Limits Podcast. If you could like our podcast and all those kind of things, then that'd be great.